Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of John Loftus. And John, as an idealistic young lawyer, went to work for the U.S. Justice Department, where he eventually got three divisions above top secret. That's got to be pretty high, isn't it, John?
Yeah, that's they call it a cosmic clearance.
All right.
Cosmic code word.
All right. And, of course, John then had the opportunity to get into those archives. You remember that a movie at the Raiders of the Lost Ark, and at the very end they've taken the Ark into this big building with all these boxes, and nobody knows what's in the boxes, and the Ark is lost forever. But anyway, of course, there really is an archives, and John had an opportunity to be in those, and he came up with some of the most amazing things, and it is so violently very important that people understand his message. And, of course, that the people within the Justice Department, certainly we're working with others in our government, to bring Nazi war criminals to the United States. And these were people who committed horrible crimes, the murder of 2 million Jews in Belarus. But I'm going to let you pick up the story there, John. You go ahead with it.
Well, when I was a young idealistic lawyer, this is back in 1979, I worked for the Attorney General for a couple of years in the headquarters of the Justice Department, and I thought it would be fun to work on these Nazi war crimes cases, and that had just been reopened by the Carter administration. And I had been an Army officer, worked in some intelligence operations, so I was given the task of going into the intelligence archives. And it really is like that last scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark. In the Suitland, Maryland archives alone, there are 20 acres of underground top secret vaults. And apparently I was the first person in 50 years with security clearances high enough to go through all of them. And wow, Dr. Stan, I learned that one-third of modern history is classified.
Well, that's why I've really wanted to get you on my program for about 10 years since we saw your book, The Secret War Against the Jews, but I've never been able to track you down, so I'm so glad that Chris Milligan published your book. And incidentally, his book, we do carry America's Nazi Secret, America's Nazi Secret, but you go on, you're in these archives down there, you know, nobody's been through these for years, and you have the ability to do this. I mean, this is unique. Nobody's done this, and you're looking to find out about these Nazi war criminals, and what do you find?
Well, I found out that many of the Nazis I'd been assigned to prosecute were actually recruited by the State Department. There were actually 2 CIAs. Remember when President Truman defeated Dewey, but everybody thought Dewey was going to win? Well, Dewey's campaign manager was a guy named Alan Dulles, who was a lawyer for a bunch of the Wall Street robber barons. And Dulles' clients had funded Hitler, and they'd funded Stalin, too. Their goal was to hide the fact that some of America's finest families were in bed with the Nazis and made a lot of money off World War II on the wrong side. And so Dulles, as their lawyer, wanted to take over U.S. intelligence as soon as Dewey was elected. But when Truman won, they had a problem. They had to hide it all. And so for 4 critical years, we had 2 CIAs, one that worked for the Republicans, and one that worked for the Democrats. And that was the crack in the American intelligence system that's haunted us ever since.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure there is the CIA is compartmentalized. I'm sure I've talked to people in the CIA, and many of them have no idea what's really going on. They believe, patriotism, they love America, they're good.
Yep.
But they don't understand there are other elements there, aren't there?
There are. And the elements came out of state and justice. And it's time for some lawyers to go to jail.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, John Loftus. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is John Loftus, and John was a lawyer with the Justice Department 1979-1980 for a few years, and he was actually assigned to the job of prosecuting Nazi war criminals. Now, remember, this is, 35 years after the wars ended, were the Nazi war criminals. Are these people really responsible for so many of the horrible and violent crimes like, of course, the extermination of about 2 million Jews in Belarus? Well, basically, they're living in New Jersey, and of course, how could this possibly be? Well, John actually got the opportunity of going through the files, the archives. He had three stages above top secret as far as clearance is concerned, and because supposedly he was supposed to track down these Nazi war criminals, they gave him the run of the archives. But, of course, when he started making discoveries about what was really going on, some very highly placed people got very concerned. So you pick up the story there.
Well, it wasn't just Belarus. I found out that the entire Nazi puppet government of Belarus had been relocated to America and dumped in the town of South River, New Jersey, and a town nearby with the Ukrainian Nazis. And that's where it got sensitive. What I wasn't allowed to write 30 years ago was that the Attorney General of the United States, under President Truman, had betrayed the president and had brought in the leader of the Ukrainian version of the Gestapo. His name was Mykola Lebed. And Mykola had, his thugs had murdered Simon Wiesenthal's mother, tens of thousands of Jews, Poles, Ukrainians, one of the most vicious war criminals in the history of the Eastern Front. And I was not allowed to mention that it was the Attorney General who personally sponsored his immigration as an intelligence agent. Now, behind my back, years later, when I exposed this on 60 Minutes, and, you know, Congress demanded hearings, Mike Wallace got the Emmy Award, my family got the death threats. What I didn't know was that the same Mykola Lebed, the Justice Department had told Congress behind my back, was he was a leader of the anti-Nazi resistance. They committed flagrant perjury in 85. And we didn't discover this until a few years ago, when the CIA accidentally declassified a bunch of files that made it very clear. So these guys are nailed. The stuff they censored out of my book 30 years ago has come back to haunt them. The 30-year classification barrier has expired. They wouldn't have taken this stuff out of my book if it wasn't true the first time about the Belarusians, and now we have the Ukrainian information that's even more damning. But you know what, Dr. Stan?
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, John seems to be pointing out that the Attorney General under Harry Truman violated Truman's law orders. No Nazi war criminals were to be brought to the United States, and the Attorney General brought them in knowingly and intentionally. And these were the most vicious of the Nazi war criminals, and some of them they were one group from Belarus was in one town in New Jersey, and the other criminals were in an adjacent town, and they were brought here and they were allowed to live out the rest of their lives. And these are people who should have been tried for their crimes against humanity, and yet they were coddled by people within our government, supposedly because they were helping us against the wicked communists or something of the sort. But John, of course, had written this book that we carry today. He had written it 30 years ago. It was heavily censored and redacted, but now, because of the time expiration, why he can write the book, and we carry it. It's called America's Nazi Secret. And of course, those of you listening to our program will know that we've talked about just the rat line, all the Nazis we helped to go to South America and protected. We're talking about thousands and thousands, well over 10,000. But, of course, here in the United States, most people don't think, well, we brought them in to help with a rocket, and we had to develop our rocket, because we had to be able to oppose those wicked communists. That's what it was all about. And they don't talk about the ones we brought in to develop new diseases, to infect the American people, the ones who came in to work on psychological techniques to be used on the American people, or those that were just allowed to live out their lives comfortably after killing. How many people, how many Jews did they actually kill over there? Do we have any idea?
Well, I think the most reliable estimate of the number of Jews that died in the Holocaust is higher than 6 million. Elie Wiesel read this book 30 years ago. He said he was astounded. He didn't even know that there were these huge Jewish communities in the Belarusian area that wiped out. So I think the true number is much, much higher. But when I went through, for example, the archives for Belarusia, we found that 110 cities and towns that were predominantly Jewish have been wiped off the map. Those cities didn't even exist anymore. So that's the level of the harm. The population dropped from 10 million to 7 million in this one little nation of Belarusia. So I think we undercounted the Holocaust significantly.
And, of course, the thing is that I like to think I'm pretty well informed. I didn't ever even heard of this aspect of it. I, of course, never read John's book, which came out many years ago, and I think it probably got the conspiracy of silence. But his new book, America's Nazi Secret, we are caring because it's so important, and there's so much in this. Well, anyway, of course, you've got all this information, and you know where these Nazi war criminals are, so what do you do with the information?
Well, I was a Boy Scout. I went to Congress. I went through the classification process. Said that's fine. Appeared on 60 Minutes. It caused a national uproar and said I want to testify before Congress because in secret session I wanted to tell Congress the rest of the story. And that's where it really got nasty. The Justice Department, we now know from the declassified files, they fixed the 1985 hearings. Somehow they got to the chairman of the subcommittee and made him cancel the secret session, and they told me I would go to prison if I spoke out in public. Well, now the time has elapsed. I can't go to prison anymore, so I wrote this book. It wasn't just about the Nazis. There was this little-known group of Arab Nazis that were on the payroll, and the organization was called the Muslim Brotherhood, and we are the only country in the world that does not designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist group.
And this is the source of Al-Qaeda, the whole idea of Al-Qaeda.
And Hamas. Still gives the Nazi salute. Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Egyptian Islamic Jihad, virtually all the Sunni-based terrorist groups and some of the Shiite groups trace their project directly from this Nazi organization. I mean, we're not saying Islamo-fascist. I mean, it's genuine World War II Nazis. The idea was that the right-wing people that Dulles controlled wanted to use the Arab Nazis as a counterweight to the Arab communists during the Cold War, a proxy army. And the last time we took the Arab Nazis out of the closet was in the 80s, when we used the old Arab Nazis to recruit a new generation of terrorists. We call them the Freedom Fighters, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. And
they became the Al-Qaeda, of course.
Yeah. People don't realize that people like Dr. al-Zawahiri and Osama bin Laden were tutored by the original World War II Nazis of the Muslim Brotherhood.
And anybody, al-Zawahiri, he's that guy. When you see bin Laden, you see this little guy standing next to him with a big turban and a big bushy beard. Yeah. That's al-Zawahiri. And, of course, he came from the Muslim Brotherhood, which was, of course, financed by the CIA.
Well, no, see, here's the funny thing. The CIA was out hunting Nazis while State Department was recruiting them and Justice was protecting state. So we had two different organizations, spy organizations, with totally different agendas. Truman said the original CIA agenda was just to collect intelligence to provide him a daily newspaper, if you will. But the Republican version, Dulles' version, was his organization, they called it Office of Policy Coordination, was paramilitary warfare, psychological warfare, assassination. And Truman said, I never authorized that. And then Alan Dulles showed the president that he had signed these ambiguous orders that had been interpreted. When Eisenhower came in, though, that's when the floodgates opened. And Eisenhower put one Dulles brother in charge of state, one in charge of CIA, and all the original good intentions went right down the toilet. We brought in the dregs of humanity. Now, granted, we were suckered in by British intelligence. Kim Philby, the guy behind this whole freedom fighter concept, was a Soviet double agent. And he told the Dulles brothers that, look, these guys in Eastern Europe, the Arab Nazis, they only fought with the Germans because they hate the Russians more. They're really freedom fighters. and we until Philby defected to Moscow in 63. That's when it was finally realized what a terrible con game had taken place. And so they covered the whole thing up until I stumbled in the vault and found out the truth.
But one of the most important things you found that certainly appealed to me was the fact that certainly during the Second World War, there were, well, my figures are about 100 American corporations over in Germany building the planes and the tanks and the trucks that Adolf Hitler used against American boys. And, of course, these were American corporations during the war building weapons for the Nazis. And what happened to those people, the people, the Americans who were working in Germany for Adolf Hitler during the war?
Well, there were about 150 American citizens who stayed inside the Third Reich during World War II.
And they were heading these American corporations, GM,
heading
Ford,
the American corporations.
GM,
and
Ford,
they laundered money from Wall Street through Switzerland and provided arms and help for the Nazis. In the end of World War II, all the American and British traitors, so that's what they were, you know, they gave aid and comfort to the enemy in time of war, were put in a special camp codenamed Ashcan Dustbin. And the American Justice Department hid these people from Nuremberg and then quietly sent them home. Not a single one was ever charged.
And these were the ones who were building the planes. They were building the tanks. They were building the trucks. They were building the things that the IBM was there, you know, helping them so they could classify the Jews.
Oh, the Ford Motor Company.
Sure.
I mean, but America's finest families, the Rockefellers, DuPonts, the Bushes, the Walkers, and Democrats as well, the Harrimans and to a much lesser extent the Kennedys. People know that Joe Kennedy bought Nazi stocks. They don't realize that he bought his Nazi stocks from Prescott Bush. I mean, there were the Harrimans worked on a joint operation with the Walkers. They had a company called Brown Brothers Harriman, and they funded Auschwitz. It was supposed to be an industrial park. They, to be fair, they didn't plan for it to become, you know, an extermination center. But, I mean, Prescott Bush was the head of the Silesian American Coal Company. The province of Silesia supplied the coal for Auschwitz to be made into, you know, aviation fuel additives for Stalin. It was a merger of high-tech German industry and Russian raw materials right on the border. And there were American families that made a profit out of Auschwitz all during the war.
And, of course, basically money was getting in through Switzerland, wasn't it? And many, basically, the companies were actually owned by Americans. Would you explain how they managed to do that? And even Adolf Hitler didn't know what was going on.
So Hitler hated it. Yeah, back in the 20s, the Wall Street robber barons were banned from setting up monopolies, trusts, and cartels in the U.S. So in 1918, they passed a loophole law allowing them to set up monopolies, trusts, and cartels overseas. So they took three countries. They funded the infant Bolshevik Party, the infant Nazi Party, and what became the House of Saud, essentially terrorist groups, if you will, that would support governments that would give the robber barons of Wall Street whatever laws they wanted. Now, Hitler was supposed to be a dog on a chain, you know, just to keep the communists and the trade unions at bay. But Hitler knew that the robber barons of Wall Street hated them. They really preferred the Catholics and the conservative parties in Congress. So Hitler banned foreign ownership of German companies. And that forced the robber barons to invest in the Swiss banks, which owned the stock of the German banks, which owned the stock of the German companies, which owned the extremely valuable patents. It was all a con game. 70% of the money that went to fund the Third Reich came out of Wall Street. That's what happened. One of the causes of the Great Depression was all the investment capital went into Nazi Germany.
And 460,000 American boys died, you know, in that war. And a lot of boys died over there in Europe. And, well, they were, of course, the Nazis were being funded through the great American families. How could you keep something like that secret, John? Why doesn't everybody know it?
Because they took over the intelligence agencies. The Dulles brothers conspired to make sure that we had an uncentral intelligence system, that the intelligence agencies were broken apart into competing forces so that no one would ever pool the evidence against their clients.
Hold that thought.
Years later.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with John Loftus. And this is an amazing story, ladies and gentlemen, and tragically, it's all true. Go right ahead, John.
Well, you know, it's one of those tragic stories where 50 years later, after these horrible corporate people and funded Hitler and made a profit on both sides of World War II, my boss at Justice is a real honest guy. He was a Nuremberg prosecutor in the Bankers trial. Roosevelt's scheme was to indict and imprison all the German bankers so that they would point the finger at the Wall Street bankers and take down the major funding source of the Republican Party. It was a very clever scheme, but he didn't tell Harry Truman about it. Didn't tell Truman about the atomic bomb either. So when Roosevelt died, the whole scheme to prosecute the American financiers of Hitler died. My boss was the banker's prosecutor at Nuremberg, and he knew that something was going wrong, that the Nuremberg trials were fixed. Funding was dried up. Evidence was disappearing. He never even knew that the Justice Department itself had hidden the key witnesses. All the American collaborators with the German banks had been hidden away in ash can dustbin. So years later, he left his law practice in Washington, volunteered to become the new head of this anti-Nazi hunting unit in America. I was his first hire because I had been an Army officer that worked on covert operations. And my job was to find out why the Nuremberg trials were fixed. So officially, I was looking for Belarusian Nazis. Secretly, I was looking for where did the money go? And all that stuff was censored out of my first book. I couldn't say at the time that the Nazi money was laundered out through the Vatican. And the Vatican set up an escape route for Nazi war criminals. That I fought to get documents declassified. That became another book called Unholy Trinity, The Vatican, the Nazis, and the Swiss Banks. I couldn't talk about the Arab Nazis and how they were funded to destroy the infant state of Israel. So I got enough documents declassified to write a book called The Secret War Against the Jews. And then 30 years later, that was doomsday. And I got a letter from the CIA saying I didn't have to submit my books for censorship anymore. And so I sat down and rewrote my first book, The Belarus Secret, to include everything that had been taken out, showing how Congress doesn't have a clue about what happened on 9/11, the role of the Arab Nazis, the terrorist networks that exist in America that came from the original Arab Nazi networks. They don't know about the wiretapping system, where we allow our British allies to use American computers to bug American politicians, and American intelligence uses British computers to bug British citizens.
Project Echelon.
It's much worse than that. Echelon is a minor part of this. This was a scheme devised by Dulles and the intelligence services of Great Britain to spy on all of their citizens without search warrants. And they could swear that neither side was spying on their own citizens. They weren't. Their buddies were doing it and then swapping information. And the Justice Department was key. The United States Justice Department criminally altered legislation to permit this to go on. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was changed to permit the British to keep on targeting American citizens. And it's horrible stuff, and it's all true.
I know it is, and I think it's so important, and this is why I do what I do. We have actually done many thousands of listeners out across America. We want to get the information, and you have the information, so I hope we can team up and help one another. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is John Loftus, and he was simply talking, going into the background of certainly how the people within our government actually covered for the Nazis. They covered. The Vatican was funneling money out of Germany so that the Nazis could escape to South America through the Rat Line. Now, basically, when John put this into a book many years ago, why this was all censored. wants it out. Fortunately, somebody, I think, in the CIA wants this information out because they'd written him a letter recently and said, well, you can rewrite your books, and because there are no longer any restrictions on what you say. So here's a gentleman who is at the highest levels of security, three levels above top security. His information is there. We've known him. I've never met him or talked to him before, but certainly we've read his material, and certainly he's written the book on the secret war against the Jews and how actively they were actually financing the Arab Nazis to try to destroy Israel. Well, that's a subject for another day, but right now, of course, he's just talking. We've been talking off air about the fact that basically, so much of what's gone on has been totally concealed from the American people. The last thing they want the American people to know is that our Justice Department, right now, of course, through various alterations of the law, is spying on all of the people here. They're not spying. They get the British to spy. And then they can go before Congress and say, well, we would never have illegal wiretaps. We would never do that. No, the British are doing it. Right here in America, right today. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. It is one of the most brilliantly conceived frauds, and I explain it in detail in my new book, America's Nazi Secrets. The Bill of Rights is a joke. It's meaningless. And the Justice Department subverted. Now, the Justice Department knew that the 30-year clock was about to expire. And my book came out on Veterans Day. And before a single review could be written, the Justice Department had prepared a 600-page report that they leaked to the New York Times, saying, okay, we admit that maybe we recruited a few Nazis and we hid some and maybe we lied about it a little bit. But this is exactly the opposite of what they said 30 years ago. When I first came out with a very limited disclosure just about the Belarusians, the Justice Department insisted I was lying, that no Nazis had ever come in. Now they admitted the truth to the New York Times.
But it wasn't the misdemeanor to
avoid the felony charges.
Yeah. But it really isn't the whole truth, isn't it? Didn't they still suppress a lot of information?
Oh, they left out all of the major things that, you know, no one ever mentioned in the Justice Department report they gave the Times, that it was the Attorney General himself who sponsored some of the worst war criminals to come in. They never mentioned the Arab Nazis and their whole role in 9/11. They never mentioned the fact that to this day, the Justice Department protects the Muslim Brotherhood, the original Arab Nazi network. We're the only modern nation not to list them as a terrorist group. Even the Arabs list the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist group, but we don't, because the Justice Department has to protect them.
And this is the incredible things that you're just not going to get through the regular media. And what sort of response? I mean, I know my good friend Constance Cumby, I had you on. She called me last night, I think about 11 o'clock, to tell me that she just had you on her program. And she was very pleased. She really is. But she's a good friend. We worked very closely together on many projects. But what sort of response are you getting to your new book? Because I think it's a great book, and we will carry it.
Well, thank you. I think it's building slowly. I mean, when it first came out, you know, I was on 60 Minutes. The book was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize. But now, with the new censored material in the mainstream media is terrifying. Because what I'm literally saying is one-third of modern history is classified. You guys have missed the major story. That the corporations have found out you can't buy the U.S. government, but all you have to do is rent the Justice Department. And they're terrified of it. Now, there are some, you know, major newspapers that are working on it. There's an Israeli magazine, the biggest Jewish magazine in the world, is going to have my book as their cover story next week. So it's just starting to get out. And I think people are going to say, wow, this really is a torch that illuminates that dark corner of history that no one's been willing to talk about.
But I mean, the fact that the American corporations were building the war materials were being used to kill our boys. During the war, nobody was ever prosecuted. Nobody was ever punished. And the information has been kept concealed from the American people. I mean, that is certainly something that should have everybody concerned. I mean, we lost 416,000 boys in that war, and a lot of them died over in Europe, and they were killed by weapons that were built by American collaborators who were protected by our government, and the fact that that has been concealed since that time is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. We'll be back in just a moment with John Loftus, his book, America's Nazi Secret, and it's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is John Loftus. His book, at least this book we're going to be talking about, is called America's Nazi Secret. And ladies and gentlemen, people must understand that the people, certainly our major corporations in America, were actually helping Adolf Hitler. In fact, when I went to Professor, by me, Colonel House's papers back at Yale University, the library there, the special library, Sterling Library, why I came across a letter that the American ambassador, Ambassador Dodd, had sent to Colonel House in 1936 saying, why are all these American corporations, 100 corporations over here, are building up the war material for, you know, for the Germans? And nobody wants a war. The Germans don't want a war. Nobody in the world wants a war. Why are these American corporations doing this? They can't even make a profit on it. They can't get money out of the country. Why is this happening? And, of course, I think Colonel House knew exactly why it was happening, but certainly Ambassador Dodd didn't, and most Americans find this so difficult to believe, that our corporations would help Adolf Hitler not only before the war so that he could actually launch his war against the world, but that we would help him during the war. I mean, were there tremendous profits made, you think? Did they actually get the money out somehow? Because of the restrictions that you could not, there were restrictions on taking money out of the country. Did they get it out somehow or other?
Yeah, they did. Let me give you a classic example. Before the war, the Dulles brothers set up three banks, one in New York, one in Amsterdam, and one in Berlin. And the banks were the holding company for the Thyssen Corporation, later ThyssenKrupp. If you go into an elevator in America, look on the wall, chances are it was made by the ThyssenKrupp Corporation, the largest conglomerate in Europe. Now, both Thyssen and Krupp were convicted war criminals at Nuremberg. They were the heart of the Nazi war machine. Their American representative, their bank in the U.S., was run by Prescott Bush. The Amsterdam Bank was run by a, quote, neutral. And the Berlin Bank was run by August Thyssen himself.
So hold that thought, please. Or we're gonna...
Yep.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is John Loftus, and he was just explaining how they were able to get the money out of Germany. Now, there were exchange controls in Germany. So, the American corporations, the 100 corporations that were over there, building the German war machine. Oh, you couldn't get their money out. And so the American ambassador, William Dodd, American ambassador to Germany at that time, writes a letter to Colonel House in 1936 and says, why in heaven's name are American corporations building up the war-making material of the German military? And, of course, most Americans, never stop and think, how was Adolf Hitler, taking control of a bankrupt country in 1933, with a very, very under-equipped army, a very inadequate army, how in 6 years was he able suddenly to challenge the entire world? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Not unless, of course, you understand that, of course, American corporations were over there building up the best enemy money could buy. But certainly Ambassador Dodd, in his letter to Colonel House, said, well, but, Why are they doing this? They can't get money out of the country because of the exchange control. So would you go ahead? You were talking about how the Dulles brothers set up all these banks. Because this was very profitable, creating the best enemy money could
buy. Enormously profitable, because it was something more profitable than money. The German currency was pretty worthless. You know, at one point you could look at a wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks to buy a loaf of bread. But what was priceless in Germany were the chemical patents. Germany had almost a high-tech monopoly on chemical processes in the world. And that was what the Wall Street robber barons wanted to buy. That was the collateral for their investment in Germany. And they became the secret owners of German industry. 70% of the money that went to rebuild the Third Reich came from Wall Street, and the payoff was this patent control. Now, originally, these guys wanted to have a worldwide patent cartel, and they set up the Dusseldorf Patent Conference of 1939, but war intervened and broke it out. But they still maintain this secret ownership. I found papers as late as 1971 where the Chase Manhattan Bank owned 38% of the ThyssenKrupp Corporation, the largest and wealthiest conglomerate in Europe. It was the stock ownership, the patent rights. So they couldn't get the cash out, but they got out something much more valuable, the secret ownership of these companies. And, of course, into the war, the companies that, you know, during the war, all the Bush companies were seized as Nazi fronts. But, you know, within 5 years, the Bushes got all the companies back. And that was the origin of the Bush family fortunes. Actually, the real villain of the piece was Prescott Bush's father-in-law, Herbert Walker, as in George Herbert Walker Bush.
Right.
He was the villain that teamed up with the British fascists to invest in Nazi Germany. But they made a ton of money out of this deal. I think within 4 years after World War II, 95% of the world's gold supply were held in New York banks.
And basically, of course, had any of this been brought out when George Herbert Walker Bush ran for president or when George W. Bush ran for president, why, it could have been very embarrassing. But, of course, all this information totally suppressed from the American people because of the degree of control of the media. And we have freedom of the press in America, which means if you own the press, you can suppress whatever you want to, and you get a reporter who wants to write the right thing, why, you blackball him, and he will never get another job within the media. So the people in the media know what to do, and they do what they're supposed to do, and they're certainly not going to tell the truth about the Bush family, or certainly about the Rockefeller family, or certainly about the DuPonts and all of these other great American families, the Fords, that worked so closely with the Nazis. That is what's so disheartening.
Well, you know, I think I found a way around that, Dr. Stan. I've been working with this lovely person in California, Claire Regge, and she's made a film using her own funds called American Secrets, very much the same as my book, America's Nazi Secrets. And it's a history of all those fine American families that funded Hitler. And with the film, which is going to be released early next year, she has a website with all of the newly declassified documents showing exactly what they did. And she's been under attack. The IRS suddenly closed all her bank accounts without even notice or even a hint of a lawsuit. Just pure harassment. But, you know, luckily, Claire and I are just people that can't be intimidated, and we are going ahead. So if the film hits the American theaters next year, that's going to set off a firestorm of publicity. And right now, a lot of people are paying attention to what I've written in the book, going, oh, my God, this is really true. It's very different from what we thought of American history, but this is what happened. I mean, these guys didn't really care about the ideology. They funded both the Bolshevik Party and the Nazi Party. And it was all about making money. It was all about building cartels.
Well, certainly Henry Ford is a perfect example of that. Most people don't remember that he helped the Nazis and he helped the communists. And certainly, as we've pointed out many times, the Ford Foundation has been doing all sorts of incredible and confusing things ever since then. Not confusing if you understand the motivation behind Henry Ford.
Well, censored out of my first book was that the Ford Foundation, Carnegie, and Rockefeller Foundations were conduits for covert intelligence money. to recruit the Nazis during the Cold War.
Now, that's something I didn't know. Interesting. We've kept for many years a book called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. I don't know if you know it, but it was written by Rennie Warmers. It was the counsel for the Reich Committee that investigated the Great Taxing Foundations. In 1954, we've kept the book in print for, I guess, 20 years. So the people will at least can learn what these great foundations have done. But I didn't realize they were being used as a conduit for intelligence funds.
Absolutely, and it's true, because they wouldn't have censored it out of my book unless it were true.
Okay, fine. Well, anyway, of course, the story that John tells is really so vitally important. What are some of the other things? Because we've been just covering a few of the things that I was most fascinated with, specifically the Americans who actually created the best enemy we could buy. But, of course, the Americans could never know that, because the great generation fought the courageous war, and they did fight a courageous war. They were very brave people. They didn't realize
what a tragedy that, you know, in both Britain and America, you know, our veterans didn't fight World War II to make, you know, America safe for Nazi retirement. I had a British historian call and beg me not to reveal that the Duke of Windsor, the former king, was a paid Nazi agent, and that his lover, Wallace Simpson, was the another Nazi agent. She recruited him, and that they were total collaborators with the Third Reich. They were going to be, he wanted to become the first fascist king of England. And the Justice Department file on Windsor is horrible. J. Edgar Hoover told the Attorney General, we can't allow this guy just to be interned in the island of the Bahamas during the war. He should be in prison. He's a dangerous Nazi agent. So this British historian is begging me, please don't reveal this, John. You know, think. And I said, wait a minute. You really think that the British people don't finally deserve to know that their king was a traitor?
And you see, but they don't want this. They want to have the people rally behind the monarchy. Oh, my goodness, you know. And, I mean, because I think, personally,
Irish Catholic. I don't much believe in the British monarchy, so, you know.
Well, because I've always felt that they, I'm sure that, they killed Princess Diana, the young man who died with her. Her father wanted to get the CIA files on it, and no way would the CIA, release the files they had on Princess Diana's death. So, if there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? We're dealing with ruthless people. It's all about power. Well, anyway, Chris, John, some of the other things that certainly you cover in your book are going into the background of the Nazis here in the United States. And you actually wanted to prosecute them, didn't you? And you were blocked at every turn?
Sure. I mean, there was one collection of files the Dulles brothers set up called the Parole Waiver Act. I think it was passed in 51 or 53, and it allowed for thousands of people to come in without regard to the usual standards for visas. In other words, this was the, you know, a conduit for Nazi war criminals from Eastern Europe and from the Arab nations. And during the Eisenhower administration, they came flooding in. I asked the Justice Department for permission to see these files and was totally denied. To this day, no Nazi war crimes investigator has ever been allowed to open the most likely set of files for how the Nazis got in. There have been, Congress has funded two different General Accounting Office investigations. It's been a complete fraud. You know, and Congress is going to keep on getting lied to until they start putting some lawyers in jail.
Well, now, basically, what about the rat line? Did you study the rat line, the technique that
you used? In fact, that was the British title of my book. Was the original one was those rat lines, and the American edition was called Unholy Trinity. The rat lines were the conduit used by the Vatican to smuggle out Nazi war criminals and other persons of intelligence interest to the British and American nutcases that... And they did. So we had the CIA was out hunting Nazis, State Department and Justice were smuggling them out through the Vatican.
Well, now, one of the things that certainly one of the most vicious of the Nazi war criminals was Dr. Mengele. And, of course, he said, we had no idea. We knew he was in South America. We just couldn't track him down. Found him after he died. What's the truth? Do you have anything on
that? The truth is that the British and Americans cut a deal. The Americans would get the rocket scientists and the nuclear scientists. The British would get the germ warfare scientists and the chemical warfare scientists. Mengele was a top recruit for the British on the germ warfare side, because his gas chamber at Auschwitz was the only one in the Third Reich that was pressurized so they could test nerve gases. And the formulas that were used there became the very formulas for sarin and VX nerve gases that both the Russian and American military stocked for years. So the British Secret Service recruited Dr. Mengele, smuggled him out to the Vatican, sent him to South America in return for his test files.
All right, and so they knew exactly where he was.
Of course. CIA was, you know, sort of saying, what's going on with this guy Mengele? And the British knew the entire story. The Americans did get involved a little bit with smuggling Nazis, but very late. It was the British and French that did it for the first 4.5, 5 years after the war. And then when Dulles came in under the Eisenhower administration, then we got involved. But it was pretty late.
Well, no, there's some people who say Mengele came to America. Is there any evidence of that?
None whatsoever. All evidence is to the contrary, that he remained in South America, that was protected by the British. The Israelis hated the British and went after him.
But they were never able to track him down. In fact, they only found two down there, Barbie
and Diane. It's now revealed in the recently declassified files. The CIA knew where he was. Everybody knew where he was.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah,
but I'm surprised the Israelis didn't get Mengele.
There was a deal that was cut, and I did a book. It's only been printed in Canada. Hasn't come to the U.S. It's a fiction based on fact. It's called The Witness Tree. You can get it at Random House, randomhouse.ca, Amazon.ca. The Witness Tree is the history of Eleanor Dulles.
Uh-huh.
And she was the sister of the two corrupt brothers. Eleanor was married to a Jewish guy who committed suicide under very mysterious circumstances. Eleanor finds out her brothers are Hitler's bankers, and she steals the blackmail information to let the Zionists blackmail Nelson Rockefeller into getting the extra votes from Latin America to create the State of Israel. And in 3 days, all the Latin American nations either changed their votes or abstained, which was just as necessary for Israel to get the two-thirds majority.
And is this really based upon truth?
It's based upon truth. The dialogue is fictional. The story is absolute fact.
And so, but basically...
But the book will never be printed in America because it's much too embarrassing to the Bush family.
Well, now how would the Bush family fit into that?
They were critical to the thing. The Bush family were the drones, if you will, for the Rockefellers. And it was the Bush family that was, particularly Prescott Bush, that was set up as the fall guy to head up all these Nazi corporations. Through Eleanor Dulles, the Zionists obtained all the goods to blackmail Nelson Rockefeller. They dumped his Nazi files on his desk and told him he had 3 days to get the extra votes from Latin America. Now, Nelson had been the American intelligence chief for Latin America during World War II. So he made the calls. It's a fact of history that between the first test vote on Wednesday in 1947 and the final vote on Saturday, every Latin American nation except Cuba either changed their vote or abstained.
Fascinating. It's something I'd never heard before. But the Israelis played hardball. They wanted to... they were desperate to...
But part of the deal was Rockefeller said, you can't go after Nazis in Latin America. You can have vengeance, you can have a country, but you can't have both. So
really, that is a fascinating deal.
Yeah, so the Israelis bought the deal. It was years later after, everybody had passed away. It was part of the original deal that the Israelis then went down and grabbed Eichmann.
And didn't they get Barbie as well? Klaus Barbie?
Funny story with Klaus Barbie. The Justice Department issued a false report on him. Barbie worked for Alan Dulles directly. There was Dulles' code name in Europe after World War II was the War Department Detachment. That's who wrote Barbie's paychecks. The Justice Department pretended they didn't know what WDD stood for. So the Barbie report was a fraud. Barbie worked for Alan Dulles.
I see. But, I mean, he still was a Nazi war criminal, wasn't he? Didn't he kill
him? No, major. Now, the Justice Department also claimed that we didn't know that Barbie was a war criminal. That's nonsense. I have a two-volume set of secret files from American intelligence. I did a thing for the History Channel on it. that lists Barbie. This is in 1944, just before the invasion. Lists him as a major war criminal known for his brutality. We knew exactly who Barbie was.
Well, it's really so disconcerting to realize, of course, that so much of what we have been led to believe just isn't true. But we have to learn from that, because to those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And I hate
Absolutely.
To use a trite phrase, but we are right now looking at, I fear, expanding a war in the Middle East. Certainly, for those of you who don't know why, a large segments outside of Haifa are burning. Haifa and Israel are burning today. The Arabs are demonstrating over there. They've police can't control them. They're probably going to have to bring in the police and the military and kill a lot of the Arabs over there, and that's not going to make people in that part of the country world very, very happy. But this is certainly a powder keg sitting, getting ready to explode, and certainly we find missiles going off over the southern part of California. It's obviously a Chinese missile, all being covered up. What's a Chinese missile doing coming up 30 miles off the shore of Santa Barbara? We live in an uncertain world, and we better learn a little bit about the past. I mean, after all, we're doing everything we can to build up the military potential of communist China, just like we build up the military potential of Nazi Germany. Do you see any similarities?
Oh, I think, history is repeating itself. It's one of those things where it may be too late for justice, but it's not too late for the truth.
Amen.
Obama, pardon them all, but let's find out what really happened.
Well, our guest has been John Loftus. His book, America's Nazi Secrets, is available for Radio Liberty. It's something you've got to get. You need to get copies of this tape, too. And we have another interview with John. You want to get this information. You want to study it. You want to help us get it out while there's still time. Well, John, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Oh, well, I guess it comes down to this. 30 years ago, I was an innocent, naive young lawyer and who walked through the most secret files in American and NATO intelligence and found out that, we've been lied to, that, 1% of, America were these multinational corporations who were only concerned about profit. They didn't particularly love the Nazis or the Bolsheviks. They funded both of them. They funded the Arab terrorists just so that the Arab American Oil Company could be created and make a little profit. But they sold us out. And the sad thing is the Justice Department covered it up. It's time for some lawyers to go to jail. I don't care whether we have a South African-style truth commission or pardons are made, or maybe we need a special prosecutor. But there is no doubt now that what I wrote 30 years ago was true. The Justice Department denied it, swore up and down there were no Nazis. And now, 30 years later, because the classification ban has expired, I can finally reveal the whole corporate connection, that this was done for money. And the corporate lawyers control the Justice Department, control the State Department. And they hid this awful stuff. And the legacy is with us today. We have an uncentral intelligence system where information can't be shared. 9/11 was both predictable and inevitable. And we still have agencies like Justice and State that pursue their own foreign policy, totally contrary to what Congress, the President, and the American people orders them to do. It's all about the money.
Well, I think it's so vitally important that we have the information, and certainly much of this I have had, but the average individual has no idea. But I think you have so much more information than I have, and the fact that you actually had access to those files, that is what's so vitally important. And certainly that you've written these books, and of course most people have never even heard of so many of them, and we will get hold of them, and we'd like to go over all of them with you and hope we can get people interested in buying them. But much more than that, we have an audience, a fair fairly substantial audience across America. I want them to hear your story, the information you have, because very seldom has anybody who's ever had access to information actually come forward. Some of them are afraid for their lives, and some of them are afraid of retaliation. And a lot of them maybe feel it's just too late. I don't think it's too late. As long as we have breath, why, we have to speak the truth. John, thanks very much for being with us, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Stan. I appreciate it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that, of course, you enjoy our interview with John Loftus. His information is fascinating. His book, America's Nazi Secret. America's Nazi Secret is available from Radio Liberty, and you can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, we have a book that tells part of the story. It's called Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. This is Professor Sutton's book. You can get my interview with Professor Sutton, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, How We Finance Both the Nazis and the Bolsheviks, the communists, and how even we finance the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, after all. I mean, if you've got to have a war, you got to have an enemy, and you got to have a strong enemy, so you can keep on fighting. And for 10 bloody years, we financed the Russians, who financed the North Vietnamese, who financed the Viet Cong, who killed our boys, and we were never allowed to win the Vietnam War. And if you ever read the restrictions put on our boys, it's sort of like Afghanistan all over again, where we're not allowed to win the war. In fact, who's funding Al-Qaeda and the Taliban? Well, Lord James, on the 4th of November of this year, just a little less than a month ago, stood up on the House of Lords, and you can get this on the Internet. Lord James got up and said, you know, I have been sending billions of pounds to the terrorists, you know, to the Irish Republican Army, to the terrorists in North Africa, because that's Al-Qaeda, that's part of the Islamic Jihad. And he had readily admitted that, of course, he was funneling it there from the Bank of London. Why would he be funding the terrorists who are killing our boys? Well, we have to have an enemy. How can we have a war if we don't have an enemy? If that sounds crass to you, go up on the Internet and put down in your search engine a Belfast Telegraph. That's Belfast Telegraph. That's the paper. Lord James funding terrorists. And if you can't get it, we'll be glad to send you a copy. You can call us at 1-800-544-8927. Now, to begin to put it all into perspective, you have to have my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand the spiritual component of this. And we've got a great new DVD by our friend Lynn Marzulli, The Watchers. The Watchers, going into the spiritual forces, the supernatural forces that are really there, because so much of this really doesn't make sense. Yes, part of it is profit, but there are other elements behind this age-old effort to bring about the one-world government so we can install the new one-world ruler. And when you understand that, why it all begins to make sense, that and the fact they have to destroy Christianity, which is why they took God and prayer and the Bible and Ten Commandments out of our schools. That's why they don't want you to say Merry Christmas, it's Happy Holiday. That's why we took out the nativity scenes. That is why they're doing everything they can to replace the message of Christmas with Santa Claus and certainly with the reindeer and shop until you drop. But ladies and gentlemen, that's not what Christmas is about. Christmas is about the birth of our Savior, the only hope for the world. So, Cindy, you need to look in the background of what's going on. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you need a good gift for somebody who has just about everything, we have some wonderful music. It's piano music by a man named Newell Oler, a rare talent, the ability to play a piano, and something you will never forget. I never forget the first time I ever heard Newell play. It was in a novelty shop somewhere in Southern California, someplace close to Hanford, as I remember. But anyway, of course, we eventually got to meet Newell, and we carry his music simply because we think it's a wonderful, restful, really, it makes you feel good when you hear his music. So you can get one, or you can get the whole set of Newell Oler's music. It's available from Radio Liberty. For the people who have everything, something that they'll never forget, a gift that they can use over and over again. That's Newell Oley's Music, our number 1-800-544-8927. I do need to mention Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to help us, why give us a call? If you're not, why please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection, because we're on the front lines of a truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization.